The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk. Regardless of how you're listening, we're glad to have you joining us. When you have a few minutes, take time to browse around our website, theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guest today is Cletus R. Bulak. He is an educator and co-author of the book, Creating a Culture for High-Performing Schools, now in its second edition. We'll be discussing education in America and how it can become better. Cleet, if I might call you that, welcome to America Speaks Out.
Pleasure being with you, Alex.
Well, let's get right to it. Before we get into the meat of the subject, so to speak, in your book, I would like a brief description or sort of bio about how you feel that this history of your involvement with education began and kind of what you're involved in now.
Well, I began as a German history teacher back in 64, and it's evolved over the last 50-some years. I have studied it, researched it. I don't consider myself an expert, although I have made a lot of mistakes over the years. I think I've learned from that. And what I've tried to do in the book is create a school that is high performing, where kids do not drop out, where there's no bullying, where they are motivated, where teachers have control of what happens, and they love coming back to school on Monday, and they're not waiting for Friday to come around. The culture and climate is what's wrong in most schools today. Reform I describe requires a major change in the way teachers treat students and the way administrators treat teachers. They just don't seem to want to give up the control.
In your study, did you see any correlation when it came to school size as far as number of students?
Yeah, there is a correlation. The ideal school, in my opinion, is about 450 students, where you got 150 students in a grade. The feeling of community and everybody can get involved is better there. The giant schools with 3,000, and I started my career, and there were 3,500 students, grades 7 through 12 in that school, four floors, elevators. It was tough. That was back in 1964. I can only imagine what it would be like today in a school with that many students. North High School in Atlanta is a similar school today, and they are going through all kinds of problems.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has had some work done on school size, and also I believe the New York City school systems have approached this. Did you have any involvement in that at all? Are you familiar with their studies as how the educational level and the performances improve when they do cut down on the size?
Yeah, anytime you create a feeling of community, you change the culture and climate, and the motivation is better, control is better, everything improves with an improvement in culture and climate. When you talk about cities, everything gets worse in cities than it does in small towns. Size is always a factor in education.
In your latest second edition, you begin with a pretty concise description of four different types of schools that are prevalent in the American system. Could you list those, and also which one from your studies you feel is the most prevalent?
Well, the one that's least prevalent is the laissez-faire, where there is absolutely no control. Everybody gets pretty much to do what they want to do. Kids run wild, teachers do what they want, and so forth. But they are out there, and I have been in them. The next and most prevalent is the one where control is everything. Control comes down from the board, from the state, the superintendent, down to the teachers. Everybody has to be on the same page, teaching the same thing, being tested by the same thing. Teachers are controlled. Teachers control the students, and it's all about control. That's the most prevalent form. And the fear in these schools is that the teacher will lose control. The administration will lose control. The superintendent will lose control, and they will get, fired or whatever. And this whole thing with Common Core is all about control. Common Core is all about control, making teachers do what they are supposed to do. And it's the worst thing you can possibly do. It's what's killing education in the United States. And the third form, which happens, I'd say in roughly 25% of the schools in the United States, the administration and teachers give rewards to people who do what they're supposed to do. So motivation is increased. But again, it's a form of control by rewards, but it does increase motivation and it is better. Many schools call it the positive behavior, where kids who do what they're supposed to do get rewards. They get to eat lunch with the teachers on the stage. They get ice cream at the lunchroom and so forth. There are rewards for kids who do what they're supposed to do. And the teachers get rewards as well. And then the fourth form, which is what I describe in the book, is where administration gives control to the teachers without giving it up, where teachers give control to students without giving it up, and motivation and culture and climate are reformed. And that's what I describe in the book. And my guess is there are less than 2%, 2 to 5% of the schools in the United States that do that.
That's the one you consider the high-performing school, correct?
That's correct.
To kind of hone in on this, these four basic types of systems, are they strictly reserved in the United States to the public educational system, or are they also prevalent in both the parochial school system and now the expanding charter school system?
They would be more prevalent in the charter school system, not in the parochial school system, because that is all about control. But, you know, the crazy thing about all this is, you have to have a highly controlled environment. In the parochial school system, they have a highly controlled environment. Kids are safe, people are safe, and anxiety levels are down. People are motivated to go there. We'll have to move to the five basic needs next, because the needs of most kids in parochial school systems are met. In public school systems, they are not.
You must be reading my mind, because the next question I'm going to be giving to you is the very high value that you place on trust and its relationship to the school construct. Would you expand on that element and please include those five factors relating to that construct?
Well, there are five reasons why schools are low performing. One of the reasons is the levels of openness and trust that exist in schools. Teachers do not trust each other. They may trust a few. And they don't trust their administration because they're afraid the administration is going to put the hammer down on them. So teachers don't tell principals what they need to hear. And oftentimes principals don't tell teachers what they need to hear because they fear a backlash. Levels of openness and trust in schools are abominable. I measure school culture and climate. I've got that data on roughly 1,000 schools all across the United States. Two of the constructs in school culture and climate are levels of openness and trust within the group. Call it group trust and group openness. Those two scores are always the lowest. And on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being complete openness and trust and 4 being somewhat, the scores almost always are below 3, which is sometimes. And 2 is a little. So levels of openness and trust are the worst two scores on the 11 culture and climate scores that I gather data on. And that survey is on my website, and it's available free to anybody out there that wants to use it. All my surveys are available. There's one that measures levels of openness and trust. There's one that measures culture and climate, bullying behavior, character behavior, caring behaviors. Caring behaviors of teachers are a significant factor in whether kids perform or not.
One of the main reasons for the big problems in our school system today, and I think you bring it out, is the fact of teacher absenteeism. And your site stresses that this high level of stress relating to this absenteeism for students also applies to the teachers. And you use the terms redirect or reminder. Isn't that just some new terminology for student correction like we had in the old days, whether it be for talking out of turn or not having necessary materials or just another methodology?
Well, you can call it student misbehavior. When a teacher corrects student misbehavior, it's a redirect. You're redirecting their behavior. The number one problem in our schools today is the amount of time lost in instruction because teachers have to stop teaching to correct kids. In many classrooms on a given period, we're talking 45 minutes to an hour, teacher will have to stop teaching on average 5 times every class period to correct a kid. Where's your book? Where's your pencil? Give me that note. Look up here. Pay attention. Bring your head up. Sit down. Well, every time a teacher stops teaching to correct a kid, the learning cycle is broken. So you've lost 2 to 3 minutes every time a teacher stops teaching before the kids get back in the learning mode. So if that occurs in every class period, you're looking at, on average, 10 minutes every hour that's lost. 6 hours a day, that's an hour a day lost. You've got 180 days in a school year, 6 hours a day. That's 30 days of instruction that are lost because teachers have to stop teaching to correct kids. And, you know, I'm talking on average. What about the teacher who has to stop teaching to correct kids 10 times a day? And the idiots who decided that putting special ed kids in regular classrooms was a good thing. And I have substituted in classrooms where I had special ed kids. And I am a very imposing figure. And I'm talking 15 times I had to stop teaching to correct 2 special ed kids in my classroom before I kicked them out to go to the principal's office. I mean, you're talking 45 to 50 days a year lost in instruction because teachers have to stop teaching to correct kids. And when you use inclusion and put special ed kids in the classroom, you make the problem even worse. Even if there is, which they're supposed to do, most schools are supposed to put a special ed kid as a helper in that classroom to deal with those problems. Not all schools put a special ed teacher in the classroom. So discipline is the big problem. I call it the existing culture of control. They wait for the teacher to control. Now, if you get the kids to control their own behavior and each other's behavior, you cut discipline problems by 75%. That's probably the major contribution that I will make in the book. That's the number one problem.
Could you explain that just a little bit? Because that's kind of unique.
Okay, it's all about redirects. Anytime a teacher has to stop teaching to redirect a kid because their behavior is bad, I call that a redirect. So when I talk to a teacher or a school district or a school about how to change that behavior, I say, I would like for you to count how many times you have to stop teaching to redirect a student for 1 week. Okay? That's all I ask them to do. And they say, well, how do you want me to do that? And I said, I don't care how you do it. Get a clicker. And every time you got to redirect a student, click it, click it, click it, or assign a student to put a hash mark down. But count the redirects or guess at them any way you want to do it. And they do that for a week. And then I say, now go to the kids and say, guys, I have had to stop teaching last week 100 times to redirect a behavior, things you weren't doing right. Tell you what, if you cut that 50%, I'll give you an extra 5 minutes of recess. And the kids say, oh, you're going to give us an extra 5 minutes of recess? Which is unheard of, you know, that teachers do that. But anyway, they say, yeah, I'm tired of correcting you. Tell you what, give me some help, and I'll give you an extra 5 minutes of recess. Now, in middle school, a teacher cannot do that because there's no recess. In high school, they can't. So there has to be some other kind of reward. It might be a pizza party. It might be games. The last half hour on Friday, you know, the teacher has to come up with a reward that they want. But in elementary schools, 5 minutes of recess will do it. I mean, they will go after it big time. And within 1 week, the kids have cut the number of times teachers have to stop teaching at least 50% to 75%. In the research that I did, it was for one semester. And when I went there the week before Christmas, they had cut it 75%. When a kid does something wrong, they'll say, teach, we'll take care of it. We'll take care of it. And the kids take care of it. They really will. And that goes back to the 5 basic needs of kids. So you change the discipline problem. That's problem number one in schools. And related to problem number one are the 5 basic needs of kids. And they're the 5 basic needs of you and me and all other adults. We all have 5 basic needs. Now, where do I get this? How did I come up with these 5 basic needs? I've read philosophy, and I knew that Nietzsche, a famous philosopher back from the late 19th century, he had some great thinking. He came up with The third basic need, he looked at previous philosophers and who had said that life itself is one reason why people behave the way they do. They want to be alive. Makes sense. Next guy comes along and says, yeah, they want to be alive, but happiness, they want to be happy. That's why they behave the way they do. Well, Nietzsche looked at it and he says, oh, yeah, life and happiness are important, but there's another factor that's even more important. He says, it's all about power. And if you recall some of the literature that's been written, The Heart of Darkness and Moby Dick and others, what happens when people get power? People want power. Why do they want power? They want to control what happens to them. So control is one of life's five basic needs. And you just ask yourself, how do you feel when you have complete control of what's happening to you?
That's an easy answer, yes. In one of your later chapters, you discuss seven strategies for enhancing a school's cultural and climate. You know, in this interview, it's kind of tough to talk about it all, but you talk about visibility. I know how to get a teacher out into the hall, but how do you get that principal or administrator out of his office and being the example needed for both the students and the teachers?
You know, I don't have an answer for that, Alex. If it's not in the person to be out there and engaging, an extrovert is going to be out there because they want to interact. An introvert tends to not be. If you look at the personality of most administrators, and I've done that on leadership style, that research I think is on my my website. It was one of my first ones. I looked at the four basic leadership styles of administrators, and I compared them to see which one had the best climate. And I believe the introvert, the person who tends to be by themselves and leads from within rather than without, tends to be about 20% of the administrators.
I think we need to have the school boards do a little bit more work when they hire their administrators and look for those types of people. But just getting on a little farther, within those strategies, one of the things you mentioned was the open house and getting more feedback, both to the parent and to the teacher. My question, I was a parent, I went to those conferences, and when I got involved in the educational system, I quickly found out that the kids that needed to be there with their parents were not there. How do we make a change in that?
One of the reasons why I wrote the book, I had the contract to evaluate the entire state of West Virginia, and I asked the teachers, what do you like about your schools? They said, the parents. And I said, what don't you like about the schools? And they said, the parents. I said, oh, explain that. And they said, well, we've got some parents who'll do anything we want for them, and then we have these others who undo everything we do because the kids go back into that family situation, and it's not a healthy one, and the kids' habits are based on what their parents do, and you just can't change the parents. The only way you can really change the parents, it's creating a character ed program where you focus on one character trait a year and you target parents. And I suggest as the first one to do courtesy. So what happens in most homes is courtesy is not present between parents, between father and mother, and between the parents and the kids. It's not present in the community. You go into the post office, and how are you treated by the postal officials? Courtesy is not present. You have to change the way people treat each other outside the school. And it's going to take more than a year to do that. So you do courtesy 1 year, and you do honesty the next year, and you do dependability in the next year. And over a 5-6 year period, I think you could transform what happens out in that community when kids go home to their parents and how they're treated when they go to the post office, when they go to the gas station, and so forth. Because if the traits for courtesy are present in every business in that community, on every wall, on every bus, on every church, there's 10 behaviors. This is what courtesy looks like at Podunk. When people are not courteous, they're going to look up at that chart and say, hey, you're not doing it.
You know, with what we're talking about with this societal change that we have to make, this has been going on since the 50s when schools have deteriorated, sizes have gone up. We've got all kinds of problems going on in our communities. Do you think there's any possibility at all that we can bring this back around and bring it back into the school so that finally we can get some kind of a reasonable relationship between teachers and students, students and parents, teachers and parents and administrators? And if you could tie all this together and how this relates to our new system of Common Core, which is trying to be introduced in the United States, and whether or not you think it'll work?
Oh, what's going on in our schools today is absolutely abominable. You know, I've got kids. I've got five kids. Three are teachers. And what they tell me, I say, I don't believe that. You know, I'm told that they have to teach what they are told to teach. They have to be in a certain spot on that particular day. And the test comes from central office. It's not their test. They're not testing what they taught. They are forced to teach what central office tells them to teach, and they are forced to test what central office told them to test. Well, when I was a teacher, I taught what I wanted to teach on a teachable moment. I would go off my curriculum for a day or a week because I had them hot. They were ready to trot on something, and I burned it. I took it as far as I could take it. Motivation is the key to everything. We have got unmotivated teachers. We've got teachers who are afraid of their jobs. We've got unmotivated kids. And what I see happening in school districts today, I am wondering how we're going to keep teachers in the classroom. I know of a teacher right now who's having anxiety attacks. They're afraid to go back to the classroom. I know of another teacher who is in a year away for treatment because they have lost it. The culture and climate in schools is awful. And you know they're not measuring that? They're not measuring. Okay, let me use an analogy. How many farmers out there put seeds in the ground without measuring the soil for the nutrients? They want to know how much nitrogen is in there, how much phosphorus is in there, how much phosphate is in there, because if it's not in there, the seeds aren't going to grow. Well, what about schools? What are these five basic needs? Are they being met? What's the culture and climate? No, they bring the kids in, they bring the teachers in, and they expect it to operate, and it's not doing it.
Bringing this all together, though, I'd like to come back to what you mentioned earlier, which was this Common Core that we're suffering from nowadays. Do you see any correlation relating to these teacher evaluations, problems, and monitoring systems, and how it relates to the national implementation of Common Core?
Okay, Common Core. I have written on this extensively. Here's my big thing with Common Core. Listen to this statement. There is nothing more unequal than the equal treatment of unequals. That's Common Core. They want to treat everybody equally. You cannot do that. You've got kids from all nationalities coming into these classrooms. You've got kids with severe psychological problems. You've got kids with different mental abilities. You've got kids who are highly unequal in every classroom. And Common Core says we're going to teach them all the same thing. We're going to treat them all the same. Baloney. It can't be done. It's as asinine as, do you remember the open classroom back in the 60s when they said, take down the walls? What a stupid thing that was before they put the walls back up. We got rid of tracking. And let's say you're a track coach. And you've got milers. You're going to put your milers with the guy who's the best miler to put pressure on those, see if they can catch up with them. In math, we need to put all the high math kids together so they compete against each other. But no, we've got math kids in the classroom who can't add, who can't subtract, in there with kids who are doing algebra. How do you teach that? It's ridiculous with some of the stuff that people from the feds, you know what we need to do with education? We need to get rid of the Federal Department of Education. That would be my first advice to get rid of and let the states take over. But anyway, your thing about the community, which was part of the question earlier, the product that we get, if you were a steel mill putting out steel, the product that you get determines the kind of steel you put out.
Well, I think you've put a nice caveat and ending on this interview, especially with regard to Common Core. But before we leave, would you do me two things? One, would you please tell the people how to get your book, and then also finish up with giving them your website, excuse me.
Okay. You can get on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. It's not an expensive copy. It's like, I think, $26.95. It's less than 200 pages. The first five chapters describe the whole thing. The other chapters deal with openness and trust. There's a lot of stuff in there on how to increase openness and trust between kids and teachers and between teachers and each other and the administration. So it's on Barnes & Noble. Just put in my name, Bulock Cletus, and it should come up. But if you want the website, it's westga.edu/TildCBulock. Everything on my website is free. I'm not out for this for money. I want to change the way kids and teachers are treated in our public schools. We need to change the culture and climate. We need to give these teachers control so they can do what they know they should do without controlling them. We need to give kids control because when they graduate, they're going to have control. The problem we've got is we don't turn out good citizens in our schools. We turn out kids who are in it for what's in it for me mentality. We need to turn out kids who are concerned about what they can do for their community and each other rather than what's in it for me.
Dr. Bulock, I'd like to thank you for coming on my show today. I also would like to point out that any American citizen is welcome to come on a future episode of America Speaks Out and express their own opinions and ideas about today's topics. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. So if you'd like to come on the show, contact us by email right here in the studio, shout@theflypod.com. Well, that's my show for today. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Pernew, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. Until next time, thank you for listening, and so long.